Hey Charles, welcome to the program. How you been?
Pretty good.
Enjoying the weather?
It's not bad.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not 120 degrees like it is some places in the world.
Well, we just got back from the East Coast and it's extraordinarily humid, torrential rains at times, so pretty extreme weather.
Yeah, we've had it relatively easy here in the upper Midwest.
Yeah, it's not been too bad here compared to, especially the coast.
Yeah.
You know. And then of course out west is been no rain, or else where there was snow, it melted so quickly that it's of no use in terms of being able to drink it.
Yeah, but of course,
AI data centers can get a hold of it.
Data centers, they need that stuff, right? And you know what, Charles? Come on, you've been listening to Donald Trump. You know the climate change is a hoax.
Oh, total hoax.
Yeah, you're still in denial.
No.
Yeah, I mean,
climate's going to climb. It doesn't matter. They can deny it all they want.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's arguing that, but one of his arguments is that, you know, all this climate change stuff is just getting in the way of economic development. You know, Bill McKibben had a really good take on why that is just, you know, a crock and all the positive things that could come from real, you know, climate action and all the problems that are associated with climate denial.
Well, there's plenty of money to be made in redoing our infrastructure to be more climate friendly. But that means that companies that have an overriding influence in our politics will have the lost cost of oil that's never removed or natural gas that's never removed from the ground. Because ultimately, it would be a completely different energy picture if we were actually worried about the climate.
Yeah. I mean, McKibben points out, you know, in 2025, renewables helped to avoid an estimated $480 billion in fossil fuel costs. I mean, despite Trump, you know, putting the kibosh on several wind projects and...
Let's be clear. Putting the kibosh on them, he actually just recently paid one of the companies that was developing, you know, wind farm off of the Northeast, $1.2 billion not to complete the project. Essentially, paid them, bribed them to give back the federal lease that they had.
You know, if Trump were to offer me a big chunk of money to go off the air, I might consider it.
The whole thing is ludicrous. You know,
don't do this. Here's a big check.
It's very clear that the future of energy use in this country and around the world is going to be tied to electrification. So the issue is really, what is the best way to make electricity? And we, of course, as a country, are falling behind other countries. You know, I love one of the things that, you know, Trump loves to say, which is that China, they just export their windmills. No, actually, China is the largest producer of wind energy. They're also the largest user of coal energy for electrification because they're essentially the factory for the entire world at this point. You know, the one that Trump wants us to be again, to manufacture everything here.
But not wind turbines.
Right. And his three critiques of wind have been, one, they cause cancer, unknown to anybody where he got that from. Number two, he doesn't like the way they look because
there's so much uglier.
Because there was some off of his Scottish golf course, you know. And the third is, well, once those, you know, wind turbines and the blades are obsolete, they're a disposal problem as opposed to coal ash.
Yeah, but that actually is a good criticism. There is a disposal issue, but yeah, coal ash.
Compared to coal ash and the product of nuclear reactors, the waste product of nuclear reactors, I think we can deal with
a bunch of
blades.
I think you missed what I thought was Trump's number one objection to windmills. The birds fall dead to the ground.
Well, no, actually, his new one was it's a national security risk. Because supposedly these wind farms interfere with the radar that the military uses, but that's already taken into consideration when they get leasing. That's already been looked at, and they get clearance actually from the Pentagon that it's not going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. So it's completely irrational. I mean, literally, $1.2 billion was spent to not bring electricity online for 5 million households.
Wasn't that wind farm off the coast of New England, wasn't it 75% done?
Completed? Yes, that's why they had to pay him so much money. But he's done it to a couple of other ones, too. We're literally paying people to stop projects that would create more electricity. You know, we've talked about this before in the program. The problem is you can bring as much production as you want online, but unless it's decentralized production like solar, you have to hook it up with the grid. The grid is obsolete. The grid was built in the 50s, 1950s. And we've talked about before that you don't actually need more leasing and buying of land to put up more towers. You just need to improve the wires that connect the towers. Because a big problem with the old wiring is you lose like 30-40% of the energy that's being transmitted to heat because of the resistance of the conduction the material.
Energy produced by wind turbines.
No, anything that's being put into the grid.
Oh, okay. Anything going on the wires.
Anything that's going on the wires. Yeah. You know, all that is where we should be going because that's the future. And we're going back to the past, you know.
Well, the past is where his oil buddies want to be.
That's correct.
And I think McKibben also pointed out
that the natural gas, you know, the love affair with natural gas is misplaced, that it's a public relations scheme. It's not cleaner than coal. It's just different than coal.
Well, and it certainly smells cleaner. But the problem is the methane emissions are hugely impactful.
Correct, because if you count the methane from the fracking, which of course they don't want to monitor anymore, right? That essentially the effect on climate change is pretty similar.
So I just wonder how much long-term damage this climate change as a hoax administration is going to inflict. I mean, it's hard to know.
But. It's hard to know, but I think the world is running past the United States, right?
With China.
And ironically, there are states in this country that are also basically turning their back. The biggest wind producer, or the second biggest wind producer, is Texas.
Yeah. Iowa's what, third, I think?
I'm not sure. I think New Jersey's like third or fourth. And
New Jersey's up there?
Yeah, I think California may be the biggest or the second to Texas. Mm. But the point is that, yeah. And you know, it's interesting because one of the things with AI and these data centers would be that a decentralized energy production mechanism like wind turbines, solar, with, you know, improving battery technology would allow them to run that without actually stealing electricity from the people around them, who then get charged more for their electricity too. Mm-hmm. But instead, I think the one that Meta recently opened is using like a reopened coal plant.
Yeah.
I mean, why don't they just have like horses, you know, going around, like 10 horses stuck to something that turns magnet.
The Humane Society would have a field day with that.
I mean, it's ludicrous. Reopening a coal plant.
Well, I'm surprised there aren't people within the Republican Party that are opposed to Trump's climate denial. I mean, here in Iowa, when I was a legislator back in the early 90s, Republicans were opposed to anything to do with wind. And then once the investor-owned utilities, MidAmerican and Alliant, got on board and realized, hey, we could build these wind turbines, then suddenly Republicans are okay with it. And then after we got going on building them here, everybody was on board. I mean, even Steve King, a former U.S. congressman.
Mm-hmm.
Even former
when he wasn't
governor,
busy reading Mein Kampf.
Right. Even former Governor Terry Branstad. Even Chuck Grassley. They're all on board with wind energy. So I'm surprised that we don't see some rebellion within the Republican ranks regarding Trump's absolute dismissal of wind. I mean, especially in states like Texas, like California, like Iowa, where you see significant investment and, you know, significant cost savings to customers and a heck of a lot. I mean, there's a lot of jobs associated with it. Jobs that would be jobs that are challenging, jobs that require going up 250 feet or higher, you know, in the air, and lots of jobs anyway. So, you know, but if we can segue a bit here for Charles, I was interested to see the Senate Republicans, U.S. Senate Republicans, join the Democrats back in July 29, just a couple weeks ago. In a unanimous vote, they passed a non-binding resolution opposing any presidential pardon or clemency for Ghislaine Maxwell. And that says volumes right there, that the entire U.S. Senate was willing to get on board and make sure that Trump, you know, let them know that they don't want to see Trump giving this criminal a pardon or clemency. The reason they do that, of course, because he has said it many times. Oh, yeah, maybe I consider that. I don't know what I'd do. You know, he's being very coy. But clearly, I mean, what I think. Tell me what you think. I think that he sees a possible pardon to Maxwell in exchange for certain levels of cooperation from her regarding the Epstein files.
Well, I think there'd be no other reason for him to give her a pardon other than he wants her to say what she's already said, that whenever she saw Donald Trump with Jeffrey Epstein, he always was quite the gentleman. So take that for what it's worth. But I don't know. I'm unimpressed because the same profiles in Courage that passed that resolution also just voted to make, Todd Blanche the Attorney General.
Right. Even Bill Cassidy, who had nothing to
Bill
lose,
Cassidy, who
but
said that, he I don't know how we find these people. He talked about how he read about all the great Senate debates of the past, and that he was really honored, and I can't remember the exact word he used, to be, the person who had to make this decision, this meaningful decision. And
Some, yeah.
all of them just going along. And here's somebody
So,
who they could have asked about Ghislaine, instead of, why didn't they ask him much about Ghislaine Maxwell? Why didn't somebody ask him, what did you talk about? Right? I mean, I know they've already asked him this, but of course he was very cagey,
right.
and all the things related. We passed a law that all of these files are supposed to be out in public. And there's still, you say there's still 2 to 3 million of them that you have. Why? That's violating a law that we
Yeah.
passed almost unanimously.
They'd call you piggy or something.
It's just,
Who knows?
yeah.
Yeah. I think that it's interesting that the Senate Republicans cast this vote. I do agree. I don't think there's much of a rebellion happening. There's a bit more at the grassroots level. I mean, there's a portion of the MAGA base that are starting to say, huh? And I met a bunch of them when I was out on my 220-mile walk last fall. And I think that's only that number has only grown, but I'm more intrigued actually with the rebellion within the Democratic Party. I mean, you've got, by the way, I just see the New York Times, NPR, all these legacy media that use the word centrist and moderate to describe Democrats they like. It's so wrong. It's not. There's nothing centrist about them. There's nothing moderate about them. They're pro-establishment, pro-status quo, pro-corporate, and they're losing. They're losing. There's a rebellion. The rebellion within the Democratic Party is real, and it's definitely not going away. And the big test, I think, will be in November, whether some of these candidates that are not cozy with the establishment, whether some of them actually prevail. And I think they might.
Okay, like whom?
Well, I think, and I'm blanking on his name, the candidate who took Graham Plattner's place in Maine.
Well, he's hardly a. I mean, I guess the question I have is, so
Well,
your feeling is that the people who are being painted as DSA, many
right.
of whom are not.
Yeah, like look,
Yeah.
El Said in Michigan,
Right.
he's not a DSA person. He was endorsed by them. I'm not sure he wanted that endorsement, but I'm not sure it did him any good. But yeah, I mean, yeah, in some places, being a DSA endorsed candidate is not a bad idea. New York City comes to mind. Parts of California, who knows where? It's not a great tag here in Iowa.
Right.
There is a DSA chapter in Des Moines. They're fairly fringe, but I think the candidates that are saying we're tired of the party selling out to corporate interests and we're going to focus on bread and butter issues, despite the fact that those corporate interests that pay the Democratic Party don't want us to, we're going to do that, and it's winning. It's prevailing, and I think it'll prevail in the general election as well.
I think that's really the key, which is I don't think anybody really truly cares. And I think even the Republicans are misreading the times. Coming out with as Trump and others are doing, which is they're all communists. These are not people, the young people of this country don't remember 1950s McCarthyism, right? And the older people
Well,
remember 1950s McCarthyism with it's not fond memories.
yeah.
So campaigning as though they're all communists. They're not, I don't think most of these candidates who are seen as, being portrayed as socialists or communists could actually even talk about Marx. And nor should they, because all the people care about ultimately is, what are you going to do for me? And the problem right now is they want to get paid more for what they do.
They want
They're
products
sick
to be
of seeing people at the top having everything turned towards themselves. That's why even finally people are tiring, even on the Republican side, of the corruption, the overt corruption of the entirety of this administration. Every one of them is involved in some scheme and making money off taxpayers.